Welcome to the Animus podcast. Today we're going to be talking with the founder of Trigger Conversations, Georgie Nightingale. She's going to be sharing with us how she works with philosophy, she sets up events, as well as having those random conversations with strangers. Hey Georgie, it's great to have you here at the Animus podcast. How are you doing?
Thank you. Very well, actually.
Cool. So, we were talking just before the interview about sort of the various things that you do. If you could just kind of share that with us again, that'd be great.
Okay. Well, it's quite a few things. So, obviously I'm a coach, life coach, and I also integrate the coaching into some training I do. So I started a human connection organization.
Human connection.
Actually, that was one of my employees came up with that phrase. It's called Trigger Conversations. I started it in 2016. Because I was just frustrated and sick of my conversations, and I wanted more meaningful conversation in my life. So I started that, and it was just conversation events and experiences, and now it's grown into conversation events, training, and I actually just launched a program recently as well around that.
So, when you say conversation events, what is a conversation event?
It's a conversation event. Well, so it should be more specific. It's not just any kind of conversation.
Yeah.
It's a kind of conversation which allows you to be free, to discover, to grow, to feel truly connected. Sometimes they're very playful, these conversations. Some of them are very deep and, I suppose, heavy in some respect. The idea is that they're nothing like small talk.
Okay.
So we're escaping the kind of, oh, what do you do, how are you, where are you from mantras. And we created a space for people to actually jump into another world where they talk to strangers, so that's a critical part of it, are matched anonymously. They're given trigger questions, which help them start somewhere else, basically, as an opener, and go and explore more than anything.
And this sort of came through your sort of desire to have those sort of conversations.
Yeah. So I recognise a disconnect in my own life. I was working at the time as a project manager. I really enjoyed my work. I felt just a lack of something. And I couldn't pin it down, but I realised I was just repeating my conversations wherever I went. You know, how was work? What do you do? Where do you live? And I come from a very intellectually rigorous, in some respect, background, where I was used to discussing new ideas and perspectives and learning generally, and just felt incredibly stale. And I wanted to find a way to have better conversations. So I scrolled Google, looked for events, went to them, met people, same conversations. Then I started running my own parties where I changed some of the rules around the scene. So I developed ideas around changing the people coming. That kind of helped in some respect because new people does transform dynamic, but it didn't actually shift people. They kept returning to the same topics. So I thought, okay, great, it's not people, it's structure. It's the framework and the rules. So I thought, okay, I'll create a space where we have different rules. And went away to a festival, went to a conversation workshop, met a stranger, told them I was going to create this event, made myself accountable. 24 hours later, I had the event structure, the name, everything. I came back from the festival and just started organising until I had what I wanted. Launched it, got people, went really well, shockingly well. And success, so I ran another one, double numbers, and then another one, more numbers. And so I thought, wow, this is a business.
So they sound lovely. It makes me want to sort of come along and experience one of these.
Well, you should come.
I think, I'll have to sign up to the next one.
Yeah, do. We're actually turning 2 in October.
Okay. Oh, 2 years old?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you've been doing this a while then?
Yeah, I mean, 2 years, I suppose, as well. Although not full time. I was still working, and then I was doing other bits and pieces and stuff.
So now that company is your full-time company?
It is my full-time company. I get asked this question a lot, and I find it very difficult to answer because I like to do many things. I think my life is a bit of a portfolio career in some respect. So, yeah, I kind of do it full-time, but I'm also doing other things like the life coaching. Obviously, it takes a lot. And I also work in schools doing philosophy with kids, so running inquiries. So, again, it's still like conversation, though.
Yeah, the theme there is those I suppose meaningful conversations, because I imagine in your coaching, your ability to have those meaningful conversations will be showing up there as well.
Yes, it is. Although I suppose I should move away from talking about meaningful conversation. I think the kind of conversation is generally meaningful, but I think that conversation is a tool to transform yourself and to transform yourself and your connection with other people, and a way to unlock opportunity and, you know, discover yourself and see new perspectives on the world, etc. So it, I don't think that necessarily comes under the definition of meaningful conversations.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, I know this is an Anamass word as well, but transformational does come to light. And the program I'm running at the moment through Trigger is teaching people to have more transformational conversations, which is different from transformational coaching.
Yeah, so tell me about that difference.
That difference. So I suppose the key thing that comes to mind is that in a conversation, it's a collaboration, right? It's a co-creation. And I think when I think of coaching, the emphasis is on that person who you're coaching, and it's their space to explore, and you're on a journey with them. And when you're having a conversation with somebody, you are both together in that space which you create. And the journey is both of you coming together and seeing each other's way of seeing the world. And you may concentrate on just looking at their map of the world, but you also may look at yours too, and you may then create something together out of that. In fact, I was running the program this weekend, someone said at one point, "This sounds a lot like therapy." And I said, "Well, yes, that's why there's a point in this formula which says share, which means you need to share something of yourself. You can't just continually probe someone else.
Yeah.
You have to map and weave." And they said, "Well, when did you do that?" I said, "There's no right time, but I recommend once they've shared something, you make sure you share back. Or you start by sharing, because of course that invites them people to share back, because of reciprocity."
Okay. It's really interesting. It's got my brain kind of whizzing here at the idea of how coaching is similar and different to that. Because I completely agree that it's their space. So when we're coaching somebody, it's not about us, it's about them.
Mm.
But I also recognise that in that coaching space, we are looking at something together from our different perspectives or different maps, and using our difference to explore possibility around that thing. So I sort of go, oh, it is different, but I can also see the samenesses in it, as it were.
Yeah, I suppose that makes you think of like how much of your agenda and how much of yourself you bring to a coaching space. And in my view, you must bring yourself.
Yes.
And the feedback I get from my clients is I was my authentic self, and that's what made them feel like they could be themselves.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily share my stuff. Well, once in a conversation where I felt like it was relevant and I wasn't taking over and hijacking, I would.
Yeah. I see that. So in your coaching, you're bringing your authentic self, but in these conversations, we're bringing our authentic selves and our stuff.
Our stuff. And maybe also there's a difference in terms of you can talk about your experiences in life in a conversation, but you can also talk about ideas. And ideas are less personal. Or they could be personal, but they're still... there's a lift. You can still notice patterns within ideas, right?
Yeah.
Which show sides of people's, who they are, but they're also more impersonal.
I just always love when I'm having a conversation around something and I start to see how it could feed coaching or coaching could feed it, or the sort of the crossovers.
There's a lot.
and also the breaking of boundaries. So, I'm really interested in this idea of, we talk about coaching being this.
Mm.
And then what happens if we push it?
Yeah.
What happens there? How can we change that coaching space, that coaching dynamic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel... I think more conversations should be like coaching in some respect. Like, I think taking the principles of listening, deep listening, holding a space for someone, and curiosity. If you could have that in any conversation, it would be so much better. Because, I think... It's weird, again, I'm so used to having these kinds of conversations in my life now. But when other people tell me and have they experienced it, they're like, no one has ever sat with me like that in a conversation. Because there's always the expectation that someone else is going to turn take.
Right.
And the turn taking, the question answer kind of thing, that they will think, okay, great, you've spoken, now it's my chance to speak. And therefore there's always potentially a worry that they might bring their own stuff in. Which is interesting because as a child, I used to be a keen listener. When someone was sharing, would just shut up and stop saying anything of mine because I recognised, okay, they've shared this with me, like, it's not my place to. And I think there weren't that many people in my life who offered that same thing to me.
Right, yeah.
And now I recognise it's highly valuable.
Yeah.
And how actually, if we had this all the time in our lives, we'd be so much happier and better.
Being listened to as opposed to spoken at.
Yeah, you know, same idea of like understanding versus respond.
Yeah, lovely. So where does this fit in with your coaching practice then?
Good question. So I suppose I should explain why I decided to become a coach. So I am addicted to learning and personal development, which I think are slightly different things, but they cross over as well. So like I read a lot, I've taken myself on courses and I've been sort of training throughout my life, from MSCs and diplomas and just weekend courses, etc. And my next, at the end of last year, I'd done this philosophy facilitation and I recognised as well that I didn't have the amount of confidence that I wanted to have to start training people. It was that sense of imposter syndrome. And I'd also finished my NLP Master Practitioner and I thought, great, I'm good at this, but I didn't feel great at this.
Mm.
And I wanted to be great. A friend of mine was a coach and he told me about Animas and other coaching schools. And I thought, actually, you know what? I've always really wanted to kind of do this. This feels like the right time. And so I ummed and ahed, I came to you on Joe Day, I read about it. And then my gut just said, Georgie, like, you just want to do it, just do it. It's making excuses. And then I realized starting it that I loved it. And also I was good at it. It felt very innate. So now I do kind of two things with my coaching. One of them is I have clients, and I generally just talk to anyone, right? So I've sports massage people, people in the city, bankers, artists, creatives, anything and everything. And themes from, relationships to need to change my job sort of thing. Or I just want to be more productive. But I think my key skill there is getting people to find clarity and also depth. So I'm pretty philosophical by nature, probably a little bit existential. And so that's where we go.
Okay.
And the kind of space that I create is there's a lot of silence and there's a lot of digging, I think this is my style. So I have that element, but also I've found that my skills have been very useful in the training room. My preferred style of delivery is not let me talk at you and you ask questions and do some exercises. It's I ask a question to the group, they then give me the answer, I then build on what they've said. Someone else says something and then I weave and then ask another question. So again, an example, this weekend we were talking about small talk, and the module name was Navigating Small Talk. So we started by talking about what small talk was and all the different purposes it might solve and what it looked like. And then I was realizing there's a lot of people were using positive words around it. And it was a complete reframe of how do you use small talk to the best way. And you can see a lot of people going, oh, I hadn't really considered that. But if I just told them, they wouldn't have taken it on board because it wasn't their own idea. So the whole space in the training room is very much, let's have a conversation about this. And if you don't mention stuff I need to mention, I'll mention it.
So this feels very much like an Animas training room as well, where there is a conversation around a topic at play and the participants are exploring the answers for themselves as well as the facilitator or trainer sharing content around those answers.
Yes, I think it's a facilitation.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the difference. I've, having done a lot of courses before, I've noticed different styles of delivery, and I think my preferred style as a participant was where I came away having thought, wow, I had never thought about it like that. And that was my thought, that was their thought.
So this is lovely. So one of the conversations I have with the Animas trainers is about how can we always be coaching? So even when we're delivering training, how can we do it in a way that is facilitative, that we are going, where do we find the answers to this? How do we explore this? As opposed to, this is what it is, go and do it. More, how does this work? What is this about? Let's explore it. Now go and practice it.
Yeah. Yeah, and also it's more fun when you're training to have no idea what it is people will bring to the space. And I walk out and go, wow, I never really thought about it like that. And that's, it makes it novel and fresh.
And it's really interesting because I know that I've been training for quite a few years now, but I always walk away from the room going, oh, there's something new, there's another layer, there's another element to that, as opposed to, right, I've just done that thing.
Yes, which actually makes me think back to the kind of conversation as a thing, is that conversation should always be something new. You should never be repeating the same thing again. otherwise you'll fall into scripts.
Yeah.
Scripts are not interesting and you're not learning and developing, whilst actually every time you meet someone new, there's a new magic to be had, because you're bringing in two synergies in a new context, a new space, as new people, given that you've changed. You can always be finding out something new about yourself, about your person, or creating this new reality, idea, whatever it is. It's an unlocked opportunity.
Yeah. It's just got me thinking about the potential of this sort of work.
Mm.
What's your thoughts on where it might go?
So I'm definitely an ideas person, so I have too many ideas. Not enough time.
Need more staff.
More staff. Well, the issue I've discovered, so I no longer run my events. I have a team I've trained who will run them. And I've created the structure, they know what it is they need to do, and they set the room and the energy. But the training is different, right? Because it's you. And you don't necessarily know what it is you do in that room as well. You can't necessarily teach others. I know it's possible to teach. I just don't know how yet. So I suppose I know that I could grow whatever I've created into moving to other cities, and that is a long-term aim. To create different hubs across different cities.
I think there's something really interesting about when we have almost an innate skill to deliver something or facilitate something, to then break down what is it that we're doing to be able to share it to others so that they can do it. I know that I've struggled at times with trying to work out how do I train so that I can train others to do that style of training? And what are those concepts or ideas? And having to really deep reflect around that.
And it's interesting because I also struggle with saying, someone will ask me how I do something and I'll go, I don't know, but next time it happens, I'll stop and I'll tell you what's happening. And usually within 5 minutes, if we're having a conversation, I'll notice that thing and say, did you see what I did there? I did that because I did this. But I couldn't do that unless I'd done it.
Yes.
So you don't know exactly. And someone said to me, you should just record your conversations. And I thought, well, that's probably a good idea. But then you got to transcribe, and then analyze. I mean, to be fair, I've done some before. So my master's was in mostly applied psychology and linguistics. So I went through and I transcribed hours of conversations and then broke them down and piecemealed what was going on.
Mm.
So I can do it. Probably I should do it.
But do you want to do it?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So I want to do it in the sense that I think it would advance and I think it would be fun, because it's... You discover a new layer, like in language. So, there's one time where there was this weird phrase being used. So I analysed a conversation in a semi-military context. And this phrase kept coming up in the literature. And I didn't know what it meant or how it was being used. It just sort of sat with me. So I then started reading other linguistics about that kind of language and then brought together theories. And then I was like, oh, that's interesting, because they're asking a question, but they're not asking a question. It looks in every way like a question, but it's not seeking understanding from the other person. Like, it's not looking for the end reply, the second of the term. That was really fun, to discover that nuance, which does take time. And that maybe is the part of the issue is, if you focus on being an academic and a researcher, you can't do other things.
Right. Okay. And you want to be doing the other things.
Yeah. So, I've got plans to actually get my podcast out there into the world. Some of the training I developed as well. I'm part of a New Entrepreneurs Foundation, which is a kind of like a support and accelerator program to help entrepreneurs build their businesses. So there's that. And I have an idea for another business within my probably umbrella. It's about creating experiences, not necessarily conversation experiences, which do things with social dynamics and reflection, etc. So that's sort of sitting there too. And it's now, okay, how can I remove myself from all this stuff so I can move into the new territory? And
Wow, so much going on.
There's a lot going on. It's fun. It really is. I love it.
Do you ever get lost in all of that stuff going on?
Get lost?
Yeah, do you ever sort of wake up and go, I don't quite know what I'm supposed to be doing today or where I'm going with it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're different things, I think. Like, one of them is that I've got so much to do that I can't work out what's most important. Prioritisation, which of course is a problem. My to-do list continually just expands. And then the other one is, why am I doing what I'm doing? And yeah, I mean, I used to have probably a weekly existential crisis of sorts with, especially when I was working by myself, I thought, you know, what am I doing? Is this providing any value? I think a lot of it was like not knowing how to market it.
Right.
Like, I knew it did provide value, but I didn't like selling it.
Okay.
I didn't know how to sell it. And that meant I had to create deadlines for myself of how long I could go without funding it, having money behind it. And also I think in that transition period between any kind of career change, you do doubt yourself and think, am I meant to be doing this? Like, you know, your identity shifts. Mm. Like, no longer are you project manager, you are conversationalist? What even is that, right? and people don't get it. And you're like, I don't necessarily want to be that thing. And I think now I've just embraced, well, that's one of my hats. I wear about 20, and I like wearing 20, and that's okay.
And I think for different people, it'll be harder to wear multiple hats. I think some people like to have a singular hat that defines the parameters or boundaries of their experience.
Mm. Yes, I suppose it's that kind of safety thing. I don't know, I was thinking about, so I was talking to somebody last night about belonging. And belonging gives you the foundation to leap, because you can take those risks knowing that you can come back home to yourself.
Yeah,
so I wonder if having a label is like that, in the sense that it's, okay, I am this, I know I'm this, I've got evidence to prove I am this, and I do this well. But I also want to be this.
Mm.
Like, you know, for instance, I think of artists as, I've met many artists who won't call themselves artists because they haven't proven themselves to be, but they also want to be artists. And so, but they also don't want to call themselves shopkeepers, which is their job, right, to keep them going.
Okay, yeah.
So finding some sort of identity that they can resonate with, that gives them sense of who they are and what they do, and they can feel free to share with people, is kind of important. But then also recognising that doesn't mean you're just that.
Yeah, which is one of the challenges about a label, is people go, oh, so you're an artist, and you go, no, but I'm also a baker, and I'm also this, and I'm a coach, and I'm whatever those different things may be.
Mm. Which is probably why you shouldn't answer the question, I am.
We should answer the question, how might we...
Well, when people ask you what you do, so you might say, I am a banker, right? So you've actually confined it for them, saying this is what your sole identity could be, rather than I am a banker and I am working on this project in this area and I found this thing difficult, hard, challenging, so you're giving them a selection of offers to pick you up on. Or you could say, in my work, I do, which is an activity.
Nice.
And then you might say, but I also really like doing this. So you're reminding people that, you know, you're not just this one thing.
You're showing up as your multiple selves in that space.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I mentioned this in my recent talk, that I think that the problem with being asked certain questions is we begin to think we are that thing. So like people ask you what you do, you say this, it becomes a repetition, and you think, oh, am I just that? And no one's inviting you to explore the sense that you actually might be something else. So at my events, you know no one's job, no one's background, you don't know anything about where they're from, where they live, how long it took them to get to that venue, you know, and it's not that we've partly kind of banned them. I mean, I've said to people, you need to bring it up if you want, but if it's relevant. You know, because you're not all these things. If you begin to think that you are A, B, and C, then you are A, B, and C, and you're not allowing D, E, F to come up. Whilst if you're continually exploring and looking, you'll find.
Which is part of the idea, which kind of just reminds me rather of, you know, transformational coaching, is the ideas of the possibilities and the different ways of being in life. So keeping that sort of openness and that exploration alive.
Yeah.
So I'm curious here about how did you get your TEDx talk? How did that come about?
I just applied. So TED, as a, like, rather than TEDx, has been on my list for a while. I knew it was something I always wanted to do. I didn't know what it would be about. And then Tria happened, and some people said, you know, you should apply. And I thought, no, I'm not ready. I haven't done anything. And that was my kind of mantra for the year, even though the statistics showed that I had, but I just ignored them. And then I did a lot of reflection over Christmas, and I identified my weaknesses, and one of them was I didn't the imposter syndrome right. And I also started to realise I had created something of value. I thought, okay, this year I want to get a TEDx, because that's obviously a step on the way towards TED.
Mm.
And I knew a couple of places coming up in London. I just saw the application and I thought, oh, I'll just apply it and see what happens. And I just happened to get through to the final stage. Interview went well. They said, yeah. I was like, right, it's happening. I guess it was surprising in some respect. It was really awesome to do it, though. Nerve-wracking, though.
I can imagine that it could be quite a challenging thing to do. I mean, I watched your talk online and it was really lovely just to see you kind of breaking down and sharing these ideas of having conversations with strangers.
Mm.
I just thought, oh, that's okay. Do more of that.
Did you?
Yeah. So I think I'm quite lucky. Strangers tend to talk to me anyway.
Ah.
So random people just kind of ask me questions or have chats with me. So now nice. I just embrace it a little bit more.
Yep.
And just instead of just going, that's not you, I just go, hey, let's continue this conversation and just see where it goes.
Mm, it's a shift in mindset then.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was having a chat at the airport with the guy who just run the Berlin Marathon.
Oh, cool.
He's a doctor, he runs another small company.
Yep.
And we just had a conversation about where this all might go and how these things might come together. And just an interesting chat.
Mm, it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't go anywhere, but sometimes they just feel nice. And sometimes they go places. You never know, though.
And that's if you don't have them, you'd give them no possibility of going somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I think generally in life, we jump first to the why or what it's going to lead to, without the sense that it might lead. There might be some serendipity. And if you just make the connection, it's authentic and genuine, and you get a sense of who that person is, and you have a way of contacting them if you want to later, then, you know, 5 years down the line, I've had that recently, someone contacted me on LinkedIn who I haven't spoken to for at least 6 years, and now we're working together.
Fab.
Yeah.
Hey, Georgie, it's been an absolute pleasure having this conversation with you. Could you just let us know, you know, how do we get hold of you?
Okay, good question. So... a couple of websites I've got. So I've got my own personal website, which is georgienightingale.co.uk. Then I'm also to be found via my company, so that's triggerconversations.co.uk. Also on Twitter, although I don't use it enough. So yeah, contact me via any means. You'll probably find me in a number of channels.
Awesome, brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.